Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, D3 Nation? I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and with me, as always, is my buddy, my big dog, Caleb Abney. How we doing, bud?
Oh, Dan, doing well, man. Lovely day. Got to watch some lacrosse tonight. So what's better than that, man? Just loving life.
Awesome. I love that. Love that you got to catch some lacrosse. Love that the fans are tuning in here. Today is Wednesday, March 27th. We're getting after it here. It is currently 11:15 on Tuesday, March 26th. So late night recording sesh here for the boys. But we love it. We love to be able to bring this thing to you. What else you got here, or are you ready to get into it?
Oh, I'm just excited to get into it, Dan. I say we dive on in.
All right, and thank you to Seven Nation Army for the quick intro there, a little remix, get the people going, get the juices flowing. Tell me, you said you got to watch some games tonight. What did you get to see?
I sure did. Yeah, there was two highlighted on the schedule that I thought were going to be absolutely thrillers coming down to the wire, and they didn't turn out to be that case, but they were absolutely fun on their own. First one, we saw Union at Tufts, which, you know, I thought this was going to be a battle. Number 9 versus number 4, Tufts coming out for blood after a tough loss. They did get a win over the weekend, but, you know, this is the next true matchup for them that they had to test themselves, and they came out ready to roll. You know, 24-5, they ended up winning this. It was a 16-11 goal streak?
Yeah, 11 in a row. 16 goals in a row. But
16 goals in a row.
11 goals in the second quarter. And a 19-goal win total. So, obviously, just from the outside, certainly was a beatdown. You mentioned that you got to see it. What do you think, you know, if you could prescribe one thing that they could alleviate right off the bat, what would it have been?
Yeah, I think it was pretty glaringly obvious that the clearing game for them was quite the struggle this evening, you know. I think they cleared at around 71% for the evening, which is never where you want to be. Definitely want to get those numbers close to the 90% to be efficient on the evening. So I'd say that's where it really went wrong for them. And a team like Tufts, you know, you can't give them extra possessions through failed clears. You work so hard to get the ball back or make saves, and at the end of the day, just giving it right back to them is, you know, pretty much a death sentence playing them. But I think it is also a testament to just their riding ability. You know, Tufts is one of the best, most aggressive rides that we've seen. We got to see it in person last week, and it is vicious. You know, they don't make it easy, and they work for those extra possessions. So just as much as this is a failure on Union's end for the clearing, I think it is something we got to give Tufts credit for in that aspect.
And it looks like turnover totals in general just were astronomical. Like 28 turnovers is just far too many to try and overcome, right? Even if you are able to compete and do pretty well with the face-off X, like, you're just digging yourself in too much of a hole. You made the point of fail clears. Fail clears always result in transition the other way because you're so spread out, right? You have long pulls that you take them, you run them off the field. You know, you have midfielders that maybe aren't the most skilled, right? Maybe aren't the most sound with their decision-making with the ball in their stick. So, like, those situations with everybody spread out, defenders off the field, it just creates some instances where the ball gets spilled. And when that does get spilled, it so often ends up jammed back down your throat.
Yep. Love that. It's tough. It's tough against the Tufts team, man. We've said it before. We'll say it again all season. They're rocking and rolling and looking pretty good.
Certainly. And number 4, you got them higher than that in your poll, or you think that's the spot?
I think number 4 is the perfect spot for them. You know, they lose to RIT, who does just lose to RPI over the weekend, which we're going to get into. So, you know, Those two at 2 and 3, I think, is a good spot. And then Salisbury 1, they haven't lost. They've dominated. We'll talk about their strength of schedule maybe a little bit later on. But currently, from what they've played, what they've put forth, they're easily the number 1 team.
You say that like you have some sort of crystal ball into the rest of this recording, or do you have some sort of pre-planned agenda?
Maybe a little bit of both. Who knows?
Salisbury people are shocked to hear right now that you have some sort of pre-planned anti-Siegel agenda.
They never saw this coming, did they?
Nope. No way. All right, keep us moving here. You also got to see a little bit of Babson, eh?
I sure did. Yeah, this was quite, I would say this was the bigger shocker of the evening, for definitely. Sure, out of the two.
Well, what do you mean? Dive into that a little bit. What surprised you?
Yeah, well, I mean, Tufts, their offense is so high-powered, so potent that them putting up all these stats and everything that we just talked about is great, but I can see them doing that against pretty much almost anybody. You know, that could be any given night for a Tufts offense. Whereas Bowdoin, I think, is one of the most sound teams that we've been talking about for a couple of years now. You know, they're very consistent. We know what they're about. They always kind of bring their A game in these big moments. And then tonight against this Babson team, they did not have it at all, man. You know, real tough going for the Polar Bears.
I kind of want to push back on you on that point a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe it's my own fault for just building up expectations a little bit higher than what we've seen so far, but I don't know that we've seen the best 60 minutes of lacrosse from Bowdoin yet this season. And then tonight was certainly, you know, not particularly pretty. And then they've also dropped one to Endicott earlier in the year. So I think Bowdoin's talented. There's pieces. I think a lot of those pieces sit on the offensive side of the ball. I think that's been a theme with this team for a little bit, is that, you know, if you were to weight that team, there's going to be a heavier scale towards the offensive side. You know, I think they probably score a lot of goals in practice. But, you know, I think the best of this team is still ahead of them. I think they have some work to do defensively. You know, I was taking peeks at this one throughout, and I happened to be able to catch the end of the third quarter, and Babson scores on an end line restart with 1 second left, where it's like, hey, there's somebody on the end line with 1 second left. What's going to happen here? You know, like, oh, he's going to jam the crease. And like, I just, you know, to give up that goal in that moment while you're down, like, of all times to have the urgency, you know, to keep the ball out of the back of the net, like, it has to be then. If you're not going to have it then, like, when is it going to happen? And, you know, like, I don't know what the defender's doing, where he's going, how he loses track of his, you know, guy, why his hands aren't in gloves, what he's expecting. Obviously, you learn from this lesson in a hard way, in a way that you feel it, you know, but like, I just, there's still some work to be done with this Bowdoin team, I think.
Okay, that's fair enough. I value your input there. Let me put that like that.
Thank you.
Of course.
Thanks for your words of validation.
Good insight, valuable points. Yeah, I'll take that. But yeah, a lot of what you said, you know, Bowdoin just not playing up to their level that we've seen them play before. I don't think we've seen them play their best lacrosse yet. And tonight was another example of not seeing that.
There's been glimpses. We just haven't seen it with consistency.
The full 60 is just not there. And, like, you know, it's people like Robert Hobbs, who we've talked about him for the past 2 years now. He's been an excellent player there at Bowdoin. But, you know, just maybe really hasn't found his footing yet. He's the type of goalie that would make some big saves to keep this game close early on. Maybe get that offense maybe a spark, something like that. And I just didn't see anything like that this evening. From that area specifically. So think some things to work on, but end of the day too, Babson absolutely owned this game. You know, this was a great chance for them to come out, play their best game against a solid squad. And they took full opportunity of what they had here. And if I had to say anything, it was definitely at the faceoff X. You know, they dominated on that front for sure. Ethan Barnard for Bowdoin had a kind of a rough night for him, 9 for 20, only about 45%. And that area really led Babson into just owning possession and getting goal after goal, just led to be too much for the Polar Bears.
I'm going to give a backhanded compliment. You ready for this?
Hit me. Not with the backhand, though.
To those who you know, obviously you guys are listening to this, you couldn't see. It was a very timely, swift backhand motion there out of the big dog. Very, I mean, you could see that he was a former goalie in a past life with the speed, the hand speed there.
I still got it.
Backhanded compliment, colon. Casey Ryan, freshman for Bowdoin out of California, has been really, really good for them over a stretch. He goes back-to-back games with 8 points and then 11 points. He has 6 goals and 5 assists against MIT. And then Babson obviously like picked up on that trend, and they hold him to no points on the night. So certainly, you know, like we said, a bit of a backhanded compliment. Obviously, a great performance and a great stretch there from a freshman in Casey. And then tonight just didn't go his way against Babson. And, you know, we talked about lessons being learned. There's one that he'll be better for. But obviously, we would have been a little bit remiss to talk about Bowdoin and not at least talk about his rising performance over the last, you know, 2 weeks here. Week, really, yep. To be honest.
Yeah, good call out there. Good shine where that shine is
deserved. How about that? 10 days.
Yeah. All right. So that takes us through tonight. Let's go back through the weekend. I want to take us first all the way back to last Wednesday. So 6 days ago now. Basically seven when you're listening to this. Yeah, true. So I'll rattle off a couple scores here real quick. We got Amherst at Gettysburg, where we saw Amherst win 9-8. Good one there. And then RPI doubling up Williams with a 16-8 final.
That one was close for a bit, and then RPI in the second half just, you know,
turns it on.
Played really well defensively.
Comfortable. Yep, they did well there. Moving on to Middlebury at Union, where we saw a tough one, but we did see Union edge this one out 11-9. And then finally, Stevens was at Wesleyan, where they won 16-10. And then we will keep it moving on. Let's go into Saturday now, where we had some thrillers, Dan. There's some exciting ones I'm really pumped to get into with you here. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the highlight, or you want to kind of work our way there?
Let's throw a curveball at all the listeners. Everybody's excited for us to talk about a top 10 matchup. Let's talk about a big time upset that they aren't ready to hear. Ohio Northern 9, John Carroll 5. Ohio Northern 8, John Carroll 5. And I don't have a whole ton to say about it. I didn't get to catch it, but obviously saw the score come through on the scoreboard. Saturday was a big time scoreboard duty day for your boy. So saw that came through on the scoreboard immediately, like kind of perked my eyes at it. And I was like, I wonder, you know, how many times that's happened before. So the investigator in me started taking a little peek, and lo and behold, it had never happened before. So a first in program history there for Ohio Northern, who was previously 0-9, but now 1-9, gets it on their 10th. You may beat them 9 times in a row. You could beat them 5 times in a row. You could beat them 6. You may even beat them 7 or 8 times in a row. You could get them a 9th time in a row. But tell you what, the Polar Bears were not losing 10 times in a row.
No, sir.
Never. 9 drawn.
In the sand.
So yeah, that was a good place to start on the weekend. One of several upsets, which is where I want to go for our next one. I think there's people who are potentially tuning in for this moment of confliction of the D3 Lax podcast. You are notably a larger Grove City supporter, and they are notably a larger Big Dog supporter. All is fair that ends. That is, this all seems to check out.
Yep.
Talk us through the game through your lens.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously a tough one from the start. We talked about it last week. York has my heart. York's got everything. But there's a little piece of me that, you know, special place inside of me for Grove City.
Let's talk about that for a second. Where's that come from? Why do you have that?
Well, you know, started off, it's tough starting off in the podcast.
I mean, I know I have it. It's not like I'm no Grove City hater, you know, like there was a time where you could have called me Grove City's biggest supporter, fan, so on and so forth. It just so happens that I didn't see the success coming again this season. So they happened to fall out of the preseason top 30, and that's where things got contentious. And to them, they took it, they fueled it, you know, and they've made their case blatantly obvious now in my face.
They sure have, and rightfully so. They're very, very talented squad, but yeah, you know, you will gain my affinity if, you know, I'm starting off in the podcast game nice and young, looking for my footing and, you know, send some nice tweets my way, build me up, make me feel good. Like, that's a got team it. I'm going to root for. They're going to have my heart, you know?
Okay. So fair.
That's
fair.
That's the affinity from Grove City. Yep.
Okay.
Fair. Love my boys fair. Down there. But this game particular, you know,
but you don't have massive, any like legitimate personal connections to anyone. No, like
zero. You know. To be honest with you, if you ask me where it was on a map, I know it's in Pennsylvania somewhere. That's about it.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you want Would to love know some or swag, though. Prefer? Do you want to know or you prefer living in the dark?
I like the darkness. It's nice.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Keep it rolling. Okay. All right. Perfect.
Yep. Yep. Love the dark. But yeah, this game in particular, you know, huge upset for them. I think it really, really shows that they mean business. They're here to play this year. I'm sorry if I mispronounced this name a little bit, but James Petrolli? Did I do that? Do pretty good there? Do okay?
Patrol. All right. You did great.
Patrol. Not Italian?
You did great. Keep going.
If he wants to let me know if he's Italian or not, please.
Can you pretend it is and just give us one anyways?
Oh, if he's Italian, it's Petrolli. But we'll wait to see when the results get in. Either way, he led the day with five points. Massive day for him. But of course, I mean, it's taken me too long to mention it at this point. Danny Stone, my man in the goal, 21 saves, completely dominated the day. I mean, just awesome. Left and right, York was getting some decent looks here and there, generating some offense, but Danny was just shutting it down left and right. And in the fourth quarter, when my brain and my heart was rooting for York to get that comeback, they were battling back little by little, but Danny Stone just shut the door on him continuously. So shout out to him. Awesome game. But Dan, what's your major takeaways here? This is a tough one for the Spartans.
It's definitely a tough one for the Spartans. First time since falling into this role that they fall out of the top 20. Could you argue that they're top
20? Bit too? Let's talk about that real quick. My perspective into you, like, you know, first time not putting your Spartans in the top 20. It hurt me. I checked the list twice just to make sure I didn't miss anything. But like,
no, it needs to be it needs to be abundantly clear that there is, you know, a top 20 team in there, but the top 20 team is not appearing on game days right now. So this is something that comes up a decent amount. Like, do people ask, like, if I feel bad being critical of York on the podcast or in general? And my answer is that, like, when I was coaching, it was what I was paid to do. Like, you are paid to be critical of your team, to figure out, like, you know, what the flaws are, how you can address them, how you can get better, so on and so forth. So, like, you know, am I going to come on here and blast them and say a whole bunch of things that I wouldn't say to the coaches directly? Like, no. But, like, I also don't necessarily feel bad for saying, like, you know, this team isn't performing up to the standards that they could be. You know, I don't think that... Yep. There's nobody in that locker room that would disagree with that statement either, you know?
100%. Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Did that, was that a satisfying answer to your question?
You did satisfy me. Yep, that was good enough. But this game in particular, Dan, what'd you see from the Spartans that held them back a little bit, and Grove City? What propelled them to this victory?
Those are two, I would say, related questions, but they kind of go in opposite directions. Give me a little guidance. Do you want me to go Spartans or Grove first? Or the city?
Hit me with
Wolverines or Spartans?
Hit me with some negatives first, some fixes, things like that. Then we'll hit on all the positives.
Got it. Okay. So, I mean, the first thing is, like, you mentioned goalie play. I won't take a single bit of it away. But I will say, Spartan shooting, there, you know, a lot of posts as well on top of some strong goalie play. But at the end of the day, they generated a lot of shots, and a lot of shots from some, at least, you know, favorable, if not strong, locations. On the day, you end up with just too many blown opportunities, right? And from some guys that you would expect to, you know, cash in on those opportunities. As a whole, it's 9 of 51, right? So not to single any individuals out, but as a whole, it's 9 of 51. So not the best shooting day, but also that's like partially because they're not generating the type of looks that I think that they, you know, would have expected to in a game where they probably felt going into it that they would have had the advantage in 6-on-6 offense and defense.
Yep. I think that's a great point. Got to take advantage. But, you know, as a shooter, good goalie play really shrinks that goal, makes it nice and tight. Could have led to some more of those post shots that you were talking about.
Yeah. And in those instances, like sometimes it's important, like, to realize, like, hey, these types of looks aren't going. We're going to need to get things in tight. We're going to need to, you know, address the shooting through shot selection. And at times that even happens. And then, like, it just doesn't quite happen consistently enough, right? And then when it does, Stone is up for the task and makes, you know, a good chunk of saves and some really high percentage ones, some really, you know, quality saves as well.
Yep, good stuff there. And then talk about Grove City. We already talked about Danny Stone, obviously, giving him plenty of love. Talk a little bit what else worked for them Saturday.
I mean, we could say some schemes. I think, you know, I thought they did a good job in the sub games. I thought their faceoff guy does a really good job of scrapping and make Vinny's job really tough every possession. Vinny violates a bunch in it, which I thought, you know, is a little bit uncharacteristic. But I think part of it is that the Grove City kid is, you know, getting under his skin and is doing well and is performing and, you know, and is playing with energy. So I thought that was like a factor. But I think more than anything, like, did I mention sub games already?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Yep.
But I think more than anything, like, specific scheme wise or individual matchups, so on and so forth, like, when you have these types of, you know, upsets that occur, the bigger aspect is, like, you expect there to be, like, this significant physicality and, like, athleticism gap. And I thought you could feel it to a degree, but you couldn't feel it more than what Grove City made up for with hunger. And I think that more importantly is like a factor that we should be discussing and considering more than, you know, like the schemes or, you know, whatever else, other factors that went into it.
Yeah. Yep. Good answer there. Like that a lot.
We should shout out some individual performances though, quickly outside of, we mentioned Patrol. We mentioned Danny Stone. Colton Laberg is the face-off guy I was referring to earlier. So shout out to Laberg. Zachary Hogan ends up with 2 points on the day as well. Really, there's three guys that have 3 points on the day. Luke Jane has 2 points, or excuse me, three guys that have 2 points on the day. And Hogan with two, Jane with two, Zabrowski with two. Where does Grove City fall? I think the next, like, moving on in the progression here, like, where does Grove City fall in the top 20, 30, 40 in terms of rankings on this side of it? The answer is between 20 and 30, so still not, like, in the top 20 and featured this week. But obviously, like, that's a huge win and a boosting win. And York falls out as a result of it. So, like, there is the weight of that type of game being felt, just not necessarily in the way that maybe Grove City was expecting to be boosted on this side of it.
Yeah. Yep, good points there. All very valid moves in the top 20 list there, which there was quite a bit. Make sure you go check that out on the IL website there. Let's move.
Ooh.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else? No, I was going to move us along.
Okay. Yep. I was too, but yeah, we can do it together. We can like hold hands and walk through the door if you want.
Nope, I'll take it. CNU, okay. 11. Lynchburg, 9. CNU with a 6-goal fourth quarter. They go into it trailing. They go into the fourth quarter with 5. They exit with 11. Quite the comeback. Just really a tough one there if you're Lynchburg to go into it. You know, really feeling like if you land that win, it's going to be a big resume booster. Feeling like you have a good shot at it just in terms of like matchups and, you know, the way that these teams have played each other in the past, with so many tight games. And then you enter the fourth quarter and it's like you can taste it, you know, and then just like that, it kind of gets all ripped away. So yeah, that one was definitely crazy and was certainly like that 6-goal fourth quarter was part of a wild day in Division III lacrosse on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, it really kind of encompassed the full day because we saw comebacks like this left and right with crazy plays and all that, which, you know, there's plenty more with the RIT-RPI game, which we'll get into, but... You know, this one had it all. It's got the comeback. Lynchburg, this was exactly what Lynchburg needed after the Mustang Classic. You know, lose a couple tight ones there, but come back in, play a great CNU team, battle it out, feel like you're in a great spot in the fourth quarter, getting some great productions from the top guys. You know, Jack Rust had a great day. Dylan Wolf also, I believe he had a few points on the day as well. So you feel like everything's clicking, and then all of a sudden, fourth quarter, this steamboat of CNU comes back, just really shows what they're all about, and really impressive stuff from them in the fourth quarter.
When you think about this game, like anybody that kind of pops off as like having the most impression or impact of it?
Well, I think most people would say Andrew Cook, which, you know, tough to argue that he is one of the best players, but honestly, I think Colby Auslander is really the catalyst of that team. You know, he gets things moving. I don't think Cook is as effective without Auslander, you know, on the field. So having him as that boost and that guy out there, that's the catalyst of the offense, I think is really the highlight for me when I watch them.
What's like Batman and Robin doesn't feel like it gives Robin enough justice. Like maybe yeah. Batman and like Batman Plus, you know, I don't know.
Let's do like, it's like, let's go to our Marvel days, you know, Captain America and Iron Man. They're 1 and 2 right there.
Mm.
Don't like that one.
No, it's you, but you went too far.
You
ruined it. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You
just hate Marvel.
You ruined it. I don't even want to talk about this game anymore.
Sorry, CNU fans.
No, I'm kidding. I like your point. I do. I think that, you know, he had he really steps up in that one. I think that their back is against the wall a little bit and he finds a little bit of a rhythm. He gets into a like, okay, you know, let me shoulder the load a little bit here and help things out. And it was, like we said, the back against the wall and in a spot where they really needed him to step up. I thought this game, that one factor of it, like watching, especially as it gets tight and down the like stretch of the game, every ground ball I felt like was just war. And ultimately the battle ends up really close. CNU gets a really, really narrow gap, 35-31. But gosh, like I said, it was just, it felt like every ground ball was, you know, do or die.
Yep, and I think that's something, you know, we've watched a lot of Lynchburg. You've played for them. That's something Coach Kadelka preaches. You know, he wants his boys fighting for ground balls, and probably a reason why they were in it so far till the end there, and it was such a tight game.
And it like helps, you know, in this instance, you had a 50-50 face-off gap here, but Cabanis if I was going into it, and I would have guessed like who, if you told me it's not going to be 50-50 and I had to pick a winner of the battle, I would have guessed Cabanis. And if you told me, you know, it wasn't like I had to pick a margin, I would have guessed it was, you know, he had more than a couple face-off win, more than a couple face-off wins under his belt than Kraus did. And ultimately, like the face-off gap and then their effort on ground balls all was really important because they fail clear 6 times and CNU fail clears 0 times. So like they had to do those types of things just to even like maximize their possession numbers enough to give themselves a real shot at, you know, the game throughout.
Yep. Yep, good stuff there. You ready to move this thing along to maybe the highlight game of the weekend?
Well, it is the highlight game. RTRPI?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's the one.
Take us there. But also, let's quickly mention Stevenson-Salisbury.
Eh? Yes, because that did happen Friday. So yep. Throw that one in
Friday
there.
Night. The biggest like factor to mention here is it's 5-5 at half, and then Stevenson just and then Salisbury comes out and just owns the third quarter, goes on a huge run, and the game was, you know, never the same. 10-goal third quarter.
Yeah, pretty close to the 11-goal quarter from Tufts.
Close. All right, now you can take us to RITRPI.
All right, yeah, here's the fun one. Yeah, this one was electric factory. If you haven't checked it out yet, go to Twitter. It's on Dan's page. Scroll down a little bit. He's got the highlight from the OT. You think it's can I just walk through the OT sequence there?
I think
that's a great starting point. Yeah. Yep. So OT tied up at 9. RIT comes down with it. Who's got it on offense?
So Pilcher has a 1-on-1 with
Pilcher.
And your boy.
Also, real quick, important to note, massive snowstorm during the game. Both teams are playing in the snowstorm.
People in the north are going to hate that you called it a massive snowstorm. There's snow present.
All right, we've gotten 3 inches of snow down here in the past 2 years. So my point of view, massive snowstorm. But he comes down, Pilcher comes down. Does a little fake high, drops it at Perry's feet, and come on, we're talking about Joe Perry. You can't do that against him. You got to finish the ball strong. Perry comes in, makes an amazing save, gets it up and out real quick. I think there's 13 seconds left in the OT, and then RPI comes down, and I believe it's who got the game winner there, Dan? Correct me if...
It's Eric Ogert, who's the transfer from your sinus. We talked about him in preseason a little bit. A great little transfer into RPI from your sinus. Something that, you know, you don't always get these Division III to Division III transfers, but when you do, it can be really helpful. You know, RIT has their own Division III to Division III transfer playing at attack in Erickson, who transferred from Ithaca over to RIT. But Ogert is the one that makes the bigger impact as he hits that game winner.
Yep. Absolute electric factory. So check that out on Twitter. It's all on there. But yeah, Dan,
mentioned the save. Did you mention the feed?
I didn't mention the feed. No, go for the feed.
It's great feed.
Give the feed some love.
Nope. You do. You've given the sequence. I want you to talk about all of the things in the sequence that pop to your mind, because I have a point that I know you're not going to say that I think is the more important piece of the whole thing.
Yeah, so that feed, he's coming down, you know, left-handed, sweeps crop top, looks like he's about to go, but then out of nowhere just snipes the bottom left corner of the pipe to his cutting man up to Eric, who we just talked about, who then just puts it away on Zabrowski, blown away, and finishes it off. And then we got the fans running out on the field. A true field storming. I guess we don't have court storming. Yes. It is March Madness, but field storming.
Yeah. Field.
A true field storming.
College football. Storm the field.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Shirtless fans going crazy, running out there. It was a sight to see, man. Absolutely awesome sequence. Game of the weekend by far. But Dan, you're a feeder. You were a guy that had plenty of assists in his days. Talk about that feed a little bit that you saw. You know, what made it so impressive in your eyes?
That isn't the point that I wanted to make.
Oh, okay. I was hoping to tee you up there a little bit.
Really good assist. Really okay. Good
assist. As an assist guy, you can appreciate that.
I wasn't a feeder.
You fed a lot.
Literally, there were plays designed for me to be on the other side of the feed. I was the finisher. But
we have very different recollections of our senior year.
Anyways, what was the question?
Hit me with what you thought was most impressive, or what was your big point that you had?
The big point about this play isn't necessarily the saver outlet, which is fantastic. It's not necessarily the feeder finish, both of which are also fantastic. Ground ball of the year.
Ground ball of the year.
That's correct.
Of the year. That's a big thing. Are you sure you're going to stamp that?
Are you still? Do you still have the clip up?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
So watch Perry's outlet.
Okay. Coming down right now. Massive split save by Perry. He chucks that thing up. Camera's working its way up.
It's not caught.
Oh, yeah. Big ground ball there.
Biggest ground ball of the season.
Big Luke old Murphy. Ground ball.
He also happens to be their best offensive player. He also happens to be the guy that, like, in their toughest moments has had the ball in his stick and has made a ton of plays this season. But that right there, biggest ground ball of the year. Boom.
Love that. See, that's why you were a good coach, man. You see the little things in the game.
That's what it's about. The little stuff, yeah. Man. No, people will talk about the big save, the big feed, the big finish, deservingly so. I would like to put a little credit on the big ground ball.
Deservingly so. So, Dan, what else got us here? So, we just talked about the overtime. We talked about the sequence. How did we get here? What led into this game here?
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic from start to finish. Honestly, it wasn't too far off from, I don't think, what we expected. Like, I was expecting it to be a tight game. Like, I never thought, we know RIT is awesome, and we know that, like, if there was going to be a blowout in that game, it would have been RIT blowing out RPI. Like, we knew it wasn't going to be opposite. And that's just, like, from, like, a game style and quirks and stuff like that. But, RPI has had some success against RIT in the past. They beat them a couple years ago. And then in general, like, the way that RIT plays and the way that RPI plays, like, they kind of clash in a way that doesn't put RPI at as big of a disadvantage as it does for most teams. You have the, like, the whole conference aspect of things where, like, the older guys on this RPI team now have seen RIT several times. So you kind of have a little bit of the recipe figured out in terms of how to defend their sub games, in terms of, like, you know, the different little nuances that it goes into playing RIT. So there's an element that's, like, not totally, like, the most surprising thing in the world that RPI was able to pull this thing out, you know?
Yep, agreed. I know we've covered it quite a bit. These RIT RPI games, they get pretty tight. I think it was my first year on the pod that we saw that big RPI upset. That, you know, I think RIT was number one at the time when that upset happened. So, you know, definitely within RPI's wheelhouse, and with a goalie like Joe Perry, like, anything is possible, you know?
Yeah. And he makes 24 in this one. And again, every time you throw out his save number, like, just it's understand. Just ridiculous. Well, that, but just understand that it doesn't state his impact on the game. He picks passes off. He's like, if there's a ball around his crease, he's on it. He's a instrumental piece of the 10 man. He is fantastic in the clear. He's 24 saves, but he's a 30 goal difference. Like,
yeah,
it's incredible. Maybe that's a heck of a statement, but
no, it's all true though. It's all true. I'm happy to finally see you giving some goals.
No single player is a 30 goal difference, but you get my point.
I mean, literally though, you almost factor out. Anyway, just wanted to let you know, Dan Kaplan, 10 assists in his York College career. So he was definitely dishing it out from time to time.
Dishing it out. That's a lot of assists. Double digits.
Double digits, dude.
15 I could take goals one of them. I ran out of fingers. I just didn't know what else. I didn't know where else to count. If I had gone any more, I would have.
Yep, no toes.
I wouldn't
no
have been toes. Able to figure it out. Thanks for doing that stat work, buddy. That's good stuff.
No problem. I'm Mr. Archive over here.
All right. Anything else from this RIT RPI game? Can you call it an upset if it's a top 10 team beating another top 10 team?
You know me, I love the term upset, but you know.
Yeah, no, it was an upset.
Yeah, it was an upset. Light upset. Bigger upset was Grove City York if we want to compare upsets, but
certainly
still a massive upset.
All right. I think this does it for now. I have and I'll tease this a little bit. I'll reveal it to you, but I have a little bit of Joe Perry love reserved for later in the episode. So if you're an RPI fan and you're expecting a little more there out of that segment, stick around.
Oh, lovely. Love that. Love that. All right. So you want me to rattle off a couple more scores from Saturday here? We can stop and talk about anything particular you want to jump into, but rattle off a few more that we had in store.
Yep. And we're going a little long, so try and hit that. I will hopefully be able to reserve myself and get into preview.
Yep. So run through it here. We had Tufts at Stevens, where we saw Tufts do what Tufts does with a 20-7 win over Stevens there. Muhlenberg Dickinson, what, you know, pretty good matchup. Two teams that know each other quite a bit, but we did see Dickinson pull out the win as expected, 11-6 there. A surprising one from the weekend, one I thought that would be a lot tighter, maybe a little bit more of a contest. We saw Denison take on Kenyon up in Denison, and that was a 20-10 victory. Big one there. Dan, did you caught a little bit of that one? Pretty interesting stuff from your end, right?
Yeah, so NCAC battle, right? This one dating back for as long as I can, and again, when I say as long as I can recall, like, that doesn't really mean much. It's been 3 or 4 seasons now. So dating back since I've started in this role, I guess is the way to say it, right?
That's a good term.
Denison Kenyon has had some significant late season implications. So obviously catching the first batch of it is going to be, you know, what sets the table for later in the year. This one was a bit more one-sided than what we've seen in the past. And actually last year featured two different comebacks in opposite fashion, where in the first game, Kenyon won, but Denison had went up early, and then Kenyon came back and won. And then in the late game in the NCAC championship, Kenyon loses, but loses after going up early. And honestly, I think that the fact that they had gone up early, if they had just gotten blown out in that game, I don't know that they even get that at large that they got last year. So the fact that they had, and maybe that didn't factor in at all, I don't know. It's major speculation. But there's a chance that first half of that year when they go down, they go up against Denison in the NCAC championship is what ultimately, helped save their at-large resume. You know, if they just get blown out in that game, maybe they don't get it. I don't know. But like I said, this matchup over the last few years has had some implications for late season play. So certainly one to make sure you're keeping track of here for the first round of it.
Yep, yep. Big implications there. And to round out the Saturday slate, we had our old pod favorite Cabrini take their last bout against Eastern, 17-11. You know, those two, historic rivalry, always play each other. What are they, 5 minutes apart right down the road? Not even, most likely, something not like even. That?
It's literally yeah, not, it's even. Not, yeah.
Campus. Yeah.
You could throw a rock. Perfect. You could stand somewhere and throw a rock that would hit either campus.
Perfect. Yep. So long time rivalry. Cabrini takes the cake there, 17-11. So anything else from the weekend before we move on to a little preview?
I don't think so.
Cool. All right. Well, let's get into the preview brought to you by Subway. Subway, eat fresh. You know what they say. So let's start with Wednesday, then we'll get into the weekend here because we do have two big ones coming up tomorrow night or tonight, if you're listening to this, you know, Wednesday morning. And that's going to be Williams going down to CNU, take on the captains there. Should be a fun one. And we'll also have Dickinson going to F&M, taking on that squad there. Should be two interesting matchups. Dan, do you see any sort of upset potential here in either one of these?
There's always upset potential, buddy. Always.
Love that.
Dickinson F&M is exciting. You know, another first round early action, I should say. Not first round. Early action Centennial Conference game. And then Williams CNU is just interesting because we get some northern-southern ties, you know. Some of those types of battles that help draw some more significant comparisons between the two.
Like that. Yep. Moving the week along, Friday, we're going to have York going up to Denison. Good matchup for them to try to right the ship, get things back on the right track against a Denison team that's been rolling right now. So I think this is going to be a tall task for the Spartans and should be an interesting game. You got any thoughts on this one?
Thoughts? Yeah, of course.
Always.
Two ways to go about this. Denison, I think, is in a spot where they also need a statement win. You know, the win against Kenyon is great. Get that under the belt. That's, you know, I don't want to belittle that win whatsoever. It's a great win. It's not necessarily, you know, a top 20 win. It's not like a super major nationally resume boosting type win. I think in both situations here, you know, York goes out, they need to get a good win under the belt for, you know, late season confidence, for, you know, a variety of reasons. You just want to feel the weight of the work that you've been putting in, you know, pay off a little bit. And then for Denison, they've lost more of their, you know, top tier type battles so far this season. So they're in a spot where, you know, they also are ready for that type of like a statement win. If they can, you know, handle business at home with York coming out to Granville.
Yeah, that sounds right. Sure. We'll go with that. And then, yep, Saturday we got another big slate coming in where we got Bowdoin going to be at Hamilton. Should be a real fun one there. Hopefully they can put a full 60 minutes together. They're going to need to against that team. We got Middlebury playing at Wesleyan. Should be a nice fun one. We'll see if Wesleyan can bounce back, get right the ship there a little bit. And then we have Union at St. Lawrence. That's going to be, you know, a good bounce back game for Union too. You know, St. Lawrence, real tough opponent. Just got the pleasure of watching them quite a bit at the Mustang Classic. So if Union thought it was going to get any easier after playing Tufts tonight, it definitely is not against that St. Lawrence team. And then finally, last notable game I found for Saturday's got to be the Lynchburg at Amherst. And this is going to be in tandem with the Penn game, Dan? Is this true?
Yes, that's correct. You
okay, tell me a little bit about that.
Kind of a cool little event. You got that going on. But I don't know much about it or what's going on other than that they are happening at the same place.
Okay. Still very cool. Yeah. Love that.
Sure.
All right. So, Dan, I think, do you have some bet of the weeks for us? a bet, the bet of the week, some bets of the week?
I do. I sure do. Ooh. How do you want to do this? You want a single or you want to go 2 out of 3?
Give me 2 out of 3. You know me. I like my odds.
All right. So first we'll go Wesleyan Middlebury. All right. You good with that? Do you care about the matchups? Or you want me to just make my pick?
Make your pick.
All right. All right. So we'll do Union Middlebury. Nope. Excuse me. Middlebury Wesleyan.
Yep.
And we'll set that right now at 3.5 with Wesleyan as the favorite.
Okay.
I got my pen handy here. You want me to go through all of them or you want to go pick at a time?
I'll go pick at a time. I'm going. Ooh, that's a tough one. I love my boys. Give me Wesleyan 3.5. Love my boys.
All right. Wes.
That's a good line.
All right. Locked in. Next, we're going to go Union St. Lawrence. This is another really, really top tier matchup. Again, you have Liberty League on Liberty League. St. Lawrence at their highest rank since I can recall. Union just got the bag beat out of them and is going to be in a spot to, you know, look to make another statement. St. Lawrence is going to be seeing that and thinking, you know, all right, you know, going into it with a bit of confidence between where they're currently ranked and what they just saw. So I think with all that in mind, we go and we set it at 5.5 St. Lawrence.
Ooh, oh, okay. All right. I do love St. Lawrence. Love them a lot, but give me Union here. Give me Union plus 5.5.
All right. I'll give you another point if you know their mascot.
I've specifically avoided their mascot all pod because I don't know it.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. All right. Next game we'll go.
Oh, Dutchman. Dutchman.
Nope.
Oh, damn.
It was a trick question. It's been changed. Changed. And I still won't tell you what. All right. Lynchburg Amherst. Lynchburg with that. After the Mustang Classic, I would have given this more points. But after that CNU performance, though there was, you know, 7 bad minutes, let's say 4.5 for this. And that gives us a 3.5, a 4.5, and a 5.5. How about that?
Okay. Who's favored in this one?
Amherst.
Amherst. Hornets going up north. 5.5, though. That's a lot.
4.5.
4.5, though. Still a lot. Especially with my man Hadley. Give me the Hornets.
All right. Hornets 4.5.
Love it. Lock me in.
Perfect. All right. You got to go 2 for 3.
All right. Easy enough.
Perfect. All right. Move us in here to our closing. We got a big dog, big take.
Oh, we sure do. We got a nice take here. And then, you know, we might combo a little bit into something. We'll see. We'll see how it works. But big dog, big take. I got an under the radar goalie for the people. So listen up. Listen up. Listen good here. You love good goalie play. You love saves. You love clearing the ball. You love big stops on the doorstep. Well, trust me, look no further than Matt Ludlow. My man has been crushing it this year. Yes, I saw your face light up, Dan. You're a fan of Ludlow as well?
Yes, and I'm shocked that you've come across him.
Yeah, oh yeah?
I mean, dude, well, maybe I'm not shocked because you are the goalie, D3 goalie guy, but he's a good find. He's a gem.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yep, he's out of Immaculata University. And I think he's got around a 64% save percentage on the year right now. So absolutely crushing it. Caught a little bit of his film here and there. And the dude just makes highlight saves after highlight saves. So if you're ever in the market for looking for some good goalie play, go check that out. It's going to be some fun stuff. But yeah, Dan, I think you got something as well. For the
I do. You got the big dogs, big takes. That is a frequent segment here on the D3 pod. every once in a while we hit one of the old Caps conclusions, which is my version of the big dog, big take. And this isn't a big dog, big take. It's just a conclusion that I feel like, you know, airing.
It's a correctly worded segment because it's an excellent conclusion.
Thank you.
That I agree with wholeheartedly.
And this is perhaps a, you know, a full season statement, but certainly for right now at the mid-year mark in terms of, you know, if we're going to do mid-year All-Americans and all that type of stuff. If we're doing that, and again, it very well could last through the entire season here. I don't want to put out any jinxes or anything like that. But again, this player, it can't be overstated how important he's been. Joe Perry for Player of the Year campaign is officially on. The D3 pod is leading the campaign. The campaign.
I have all the pickets, the everything.
Stickers on your Under Armour vest.
Yep, I got it all. Got my pin, got my Joe Perry for president sign. Vote for Perry.
Player of the Year.
We need to come up with a cool acronym that kind of rhymes with Perry, like Perry for Perry or something like that.
Yes. I'll put you on charge of that in terms of...
I'm on it. Give me a week.
Just to run through the resume quickly here. He's had phenomenal performances just about every step of the way. He is really just... I mean, he gives them, like we said earlier, he gives them a ton in a bunch of different ways. He started the season with 18 saves against York. He had another situation where... you know, they're down against Middlebury. They end up climbing all the way back. He's big down the stretch. He makes 19 against them in that game. And then again, this weekend, he has 24 against RIT in that win, including that big time save in overtime. And in the course of that, his team has gone 10-0. He's gone and taken his team from 15th in preseason all the way up to number 2. And I think they're good everywhere. You know, they're a good team. But he's just so clearly far and away the best player in his position right now in my eyes. And, I mean, there's guys that maybe, you know, you can make a lot of different arguments for second. And there's some guys that are really playing at a high level. But just what he gives them in general has been so, so integral for their success. And he's at 62%. Like, his numbers back it up. They're winning. And everything he does on top of the numbers is just like icing on the cake for a very clear argument to me of right now, mid-year player of the year and potential full-year player of the year. Certainly on the radar, on the watch. Joe Perry, RPI goalie.
Could not agree with that more. And I think you summed it up perfectly in the RPI roundup when you said he's the 30 goal difference, which you walked back a little bit, but I'm going to stamp that down, man. Like 24 saves, not only that though, but you're right. He's picking off passes. He's making ground balls. He's getting the ball up and out to the other end. Like, the amount of things that he does for the team are, you know, unquantifiable basically at this point.
Facts. Boom. I'm glad Boom. We got that out. I feel better now. I feel better as a human for having gotten that, you know, off my chest.
Yep.
All right. Final, what do we want to call this? A request? A gripe?
Gripe's a good term for it.
Okay. I want to see Salisbury play more northern teams, period.
Big dog and cap. Sincerely.
It's just like, you know, you have so many teams that are like beating up on each other. And then Salisbury, like, they came in at number one and they've sit at number one. And maybe this is a backhanded way of saying like York needs to be better and Gettysburg needs to be better. You know, the two teams that, you know, are perennially very good on their schedule in an out of conference manner, but it's just frustrating with, you know, how much talent they have and how often you have these top caliber games. And we just haven't had Salisbury in many of them.
Yeah. Like, you know, where are they taking on the RITs or the Tufts or the, you know, the RPIs, the St. Lawrence's, anything like that? You know,
maybe they're just smart and have figured it out. And right now, you know, Coach Berkman is just smirking as everybody else, you know, the world kind of burns and everybody else beats up on each other. And, you know, RIT and RPI and Tufts are going to have to go through each other to even, you know, and St. Lawrence and are going to have to go through each other just to even, you know, get to them at the end of the, at the end of the spectrum. You know, it's like,
I feel like it keeps the lore of Salisbury alive. It's just like, oh, like we don't want to play them. Like they're big, they're talented, they're physical. Like we don't want to go up against them. You know, you see them in the regular season, it humanizes them a little bit. It says, okay, we can play with these guys. Kind of the reason at York when we played Salisbury for the third time in the CAC championship, we believe we could actually win it because we had been in those games with them. You're coming in fresh like that. Maybe you don't have that same feeling. So I see the point, but I'm also with you. They got to strengthen their strength of schedule with some Northern teams. Just from a D3 fan's perspective, it would be so awesome to see, you know, no offense to any of the teams that they do have on their schedule, but a tough Salisbury game in mid-March, nothing would get me more excited.
Boom. We want to see it.
But it could be all a moot point anyway, because Salisbury does play the big Brad Cabrini to end their season. So you never know how it's going to end for the old goals. That's going to be a tight one, man. I don't know. I need to see more. I need to see more evidence before I make a full on conclusion. But I think
it's circled on the calendar. How about that?
Yeah, gotta be. I mean, the Cavalier boys, they've got to be fired up for that one. End their season off with a bang like that. Could you imagine a better storybook ending?
I don't know. That'd be pretty good. You're right. Like, literally, it'd be, you know, a lot of bragging rights in that moment.
The journalist in you has to be feeling that one.
They've had some good battles too over the years, so maybe you're on to something.
Thank you.
But then we wouldn't be able to talk about their strength of schedule.
True.
It would backfire on us. Double-edged sword for you, brother.
You know what? I will fall on that sword.
Okay. All right.
Took a move.
What else you got here? Anything for the fans?
Think that's about all I got. You know, awesome weekend coming up for lacrosse, so make sure you're tuning in, keeping updates, checking out the scoreboard, everything like that. It's going to be a fun one this week.
Great plug. Hashtag ILD3 scoreboard. Let's do this thing.
Boom. Love y'all.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast. The source of the sport.